Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk royal wedding. You can stick around for that, Al, if you want.
I brought my tiara, so I'm all ready.
You're all ready to go. Well, it's time for our monthly visit from our resident philosopher, Al Genie. Tonight, let's talk about the great man theory. It's based on the philosophy of the 19th century thinker named Thomas Carlyle, who said that the history of the world is but the biography of great men. Essentially, heroes shape history. And the conversation tonight is about the great modern man and whether or not Carlyle's theory holds water. Do you have to be a great man to be a great leader? This theory plays out well for leaders like FDR or Winston Churchill. But what happens when the great man theory goes sideways? A leader, say someone like the biggest monster in human history, Adolf Hitler, has the traits aligned with the great man theory. Is he a great man? Is he a great leader? Our resident Download philosopher Al Genie is here tonight. Al's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. He joins us monthly here on the program. Al, great to see you, man.
Always wonderful to be here. And you know, you hit it right on the head. The great man theory, in some sense, is an idea that comes in and out, and is it really important, and is it somewhat passé? And certainly the title itself is passé. Yeah. It's a great person theory.
Right.
But the reality is the great leaders of history have been predominantly men, except for a few real exceptions.
We can change in our heads. We'll just say, whenever we say the great man theory,
we mean man as group, right.
Yeah. Man/slash woman.
Right, right. And given that this year's Academy Awards and Gary Odom and The Darkest Hour, which is a really fantastic performance, to be assured, and given the political posturing going on around us as we speak with regard to Russia, North Korea, and China, and the nationalism that's reoccurring in Poland and Hungary and Italy, with leaders who are trying to take over in a kind of despotic manner, I think it's time to relook at this notion of what we mean by great leader. And we're not even mentioning our president.
Well, we'll mention him as well, I mean, because he fits into this mold.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And you wonder how much. And before we get into the posturing about the actual current events and how the leaders of today. Let's talk about this theory.
Yeah.
What is the theory? What is the great man theory? Where does it come from? Who's Thomas Carlyle? Research for me. Google.
I'm Google Genie. I'm Google Genie. That's a wonderful way to look at it. You know, he's a 19th century great commentator, and he is an historian, a great thinker, and a philosopher. It depends what cap he is wearing at the time. And he talked about the notion that the history of the world is about the biography of great men. And that great men, not great movements, not demographics, not economic forces, change the course of history. And what a man has accomplished in the world is the sum total of the history of the world. And that's how we look at the world. And what's special about these great men is, his theory, comes out of the fact that these guys are winners. And they're because they come to reality because there's a crisis, not simply an existential crisis, but rather a crisis that can change the course, the pattern, the structure of a society, right, of a country, of a nation, of a world. And so the great men theory comes in that individuals come in and disrupt that, change that, resolve that, rehabilitate that, reform that, redefine. Find that in a way that the crises fits their talents, their capacity, and their character, and they're the right person at the right time. So what's really important about this is, in some very real sense, that the great man theory is a crisis-specific kind of ability. You can be a great man at the wrong time in the wrong place, and you're Joe Schmo from Idaho, okay? The reality is, the right person at the right time, and the example we're going to get to, I don't want to get too much away from it, is Winston Churchill.
Well, let's go right there, because it's so interesting to think about it. When you really put your thinking cap on, you think about different movements, history, history book, and you're absolutely right that it's not necessarily about the movements; it's about the people who exemplify the movements, personify the movements,
and it's this combination. In fact,
like Julius Caesar,
right? Julius Caesar, right? And when you look at the history of a great men, you know it's kind of a mixed bag. You have Kubla Khan. People forget that.
No,
Kubla
they're not
Khan
good. We're going to get to that point.
Right.
This doesn't mean that they're good people, right?
They're incredible people. But in America, for example, there have really been three great presidents. And they were the presidents at their time and the place that they were really needed. And their presence affected the change that stabilized the society. And we're talking about Washington,
Lincoln,
and FDR. Okay.
Homie,
and right, so
it.
Far, you got a C-plus going right now.
I
but
like,
I wasn't crazy about your last term.
Ah, darn it.
Term paper. And the reality is, when you think about it, why Washington? You know, in some sense, Washington has been at the top. I do all these wonderful surveys about the greatest presidents, and Lincoln is now supreme over everyone. But Washington is always up there. If not one, he's two or three, or one, two, or three, because he was the first person to hold office. And in a very real sense, Washington understood – that everything he did was setting a precedent. Because there had never been a president in the world. Right. That wonderful song that King George sings in Hamilton is, what is he? He's going to change every 4 to 8 years? This is ridiculous authority. And Hamilton's, you know, the thing that we didn't like about Hamilton, initially when the Federalist Papers and when we were writing the Constitution, Hamilton wanted a lifelong presidency. And that too much mimicked a monarch, so that wasn't acceptable to Jefferson.
But even back to, that is interesting because the crisis of the time was starting something new, starting a new country.
Sorry, to be very careful.
And what I love about it, you're right, when you look back at some of the ways that Washington created policy or even some of the great quotes that he did, they're all about understanding where he is in his role at that moment.
Absolutely, and his demeanor. He didn't carry a sword. He did not dress in military garb once he became elected.
And he could have. It wouldn't have made a difference. It's
because
he had been commander
of the armed forces.
He was commander.
And by the way, a little known fact that under Adams, he was reappointed as commander of the armed forces when Adams had to raise an army. But he lived out this theory. He lived out the presidency. He was a hero in war and peace. Lincoln, of course, I've been studying Mandela this week. It's been I'm through with finals. Graduation is over.
This is what you do when school's out?
I read books for 12 hours a day. It is heaven, okay? I've been reading Mandela. And will we ever fully understand Mandela? Because he's such an iconic figure. Do we find out, you know, what kind of a saint he was? Or was he, you know, what was he doing? But Lincoln is so large, it's hard to get over his martyrdom. It's hard to get over his iconic reference. He's a secular saint. But in reality, Lincoln had fought slavery, fought a civil war that's still not over in some real sense ideologically, and he redefined democracy in America. The Gettysburg Address is the most important 272 words ever written in our political system, that this nation belongs to the people, for the people, and by the people.
And he knew he had to write that at that moment.
He knew that, because democracy, not just slavery, democracy was at risk. And FDR, the same way. You know, we talk about FDR, the Great Depression, and every undergraduate knows a part of FDR's opening speech, inaugural speech. The only thing we have to fear is
fear of bugs in my ears.
Fear of bugs in my ears. All right, we're down to C minus, but we'll get back to you on that.
Oh, Professor, it was a long night last night.
Anyway, we won the basketball tournament. Can I have an extension? By the way, my students on the team turned in their papers on time.
That's great.
I'm so proud of them. Anyway, and in a real sense, he not only fought the Depression, he fought for democracy. It was not a given thing. There were a couple of people that were really worried about Huey Long and one General Douglas MacArthur. Would democracy, as we understood it, fall apart? He saved the nation spiritually, economically, and politically. And because of that, they are awarded, they're awarded that. And I think we have to remember, great leaders are great and effective in what they do. They can be compassionate, all that. But there's a warning here. Got to be careful about great leaders. As Churchill once said, for Russians, their worst misfortune was that Lenin was born. Their next worst misfortune was he died, and therefore Stalin.
Well, let's talk about Winston Churchill, because a lot of this plays out. Yes. We're talking about the great man theory, and of course, does that mean that a great man means a great leader tonight? The resident philosopher Al Jeaney is in studio. He's the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. Joins us once a month. We'll take a quick break. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in on the convo. We'll be right back. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight. It's a monthly visit to the show. Professor Al Jeaney, our resident philosopher, professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. Tonight we're talking about the great man theory and this idea that heroes shape history. And this was Thomas Carlyle who famously said, the history of the world is but the biography of great men.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just kind of set up what that was in the last segment. But let's talk about the modern.
Yeah,
we talked about the 20th century modern great man theory.
And this is historians reporting, and I'm just reporting on historians. But in the 20th century, historians suggest, don't forget we're in the 21st century, there are only six great leaders, world impactful leaders. And it's 2-4, and the good guys are losing. The two good guys are FDR and Churchill, and that's we can explain more about that. But the bad guys are Hitler, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao Zedong. And this is fantastic. And some historians put in, as possible good guys, Mandela and Gandhi. But Mandela then is out in the 2000s, and so his activism was in before the turn of the century, so on and so forth. But certainly we'd have to put him in that milieu, and Gandhi, I would also put that milieu. But the reality is the bad guys outweigh the good guys. And if you look at modern day great leaders, and we're not talking about are they great in their impact now, or are they great in their goodness right now, or in the beneficence, you have Trump, Putin, Xi Jinping, which I always mispronounce. Please forgive me.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah. And so you
right? Right. North Korea would North be someone Korea. Who fits into this mold.
Well, he's a small... He is affecting world change because of a couple of devices, but he doesn't have... Okay. I think what historians would talk about is this great sociological impact and economic impact.
Let me ask you, I mean, the word great is probably what sticks in people's mind. I mean, man, it's again, man, woman, this is an old theory, but this idea of great, because you're right, two what we would consider to be good guys and four bad guys.
Right.
And great kind of always throws people off because you don't want to throw superlatives like the word great on top of
great
somebody
here
who's
means
a mass
effective.
Murderer.
What have they done? What has been their affect on the world? How have they changed the world? Again, what have they done to save their social system? So there's a lot of great men who have been that is in the news who have been actually counterproductive in that in America. Joe McCarthy, Huey Long, Father Coughlin. You wouldn't remember that. That would be 1932. Trust me, I was there. David Duke, Jim Jones. Jones, Paul Pot, Mussolini, Saddam Hussein, Mahatma Gandhi. I mean, what's his name from Libya? I'm blanking on his name right now. Gaddafi, excuse me.
Yeah.
What you have here is effective men who have had real power, but have they been great to their society? That's the difference. How have individuals been great? You would say that Catherine the Great was a great ruler because Catherine the Great, in some sense, brought Russia from kind of a Byzantine post-medieval world and tried to drag Russia into the modern world, the beginning of that process of dragging modern to the Russian world. We can say that very, very clearly that the individuals have impact in how they have changed the world. So whether they're good or bad, we have to admit that Adolf Hitler was a great,
that's an effective
leader.
Right.
When you look at the 20th century, when we used to be on another channel, when we did all those things at the year 2000, the most effective thing, Adolf Hitler came at the top of everything because he changed the structure of Europe, the face of Europe, the designation of countries, the 68 million people dead in World War II, and how that changed the whole world because one man, I would say the right thing at the right time, it happened to be the wrong message.
But that's what you're talking about,
right.
This idea that do great when we just define, that's defining great men.
Right, right.
But when you talk about great leaders and whether or not their effect is for good, if they're changing the world in a good way, you start to see a lot of these names fall off.
They do fall off, but I think you're misinterpreting historians when they say great men very often, again, have affect. Now, are they selfish or selfless?
Right.
The issue, are they beneficial or are they draconianly nihilistic? And I think that we have to put down, you know, in a very real sense, we always put down Hitler, but we've forgotten the fact that Joseph Stalin probably killed off 38 million of his own people in order to impose a dialectical system that never really worked. And by the way, you recommended that film to me.
Such a great film, isn't it?
And I didn't like it at all, and I'm so sorry.
Do not listen to Professor. This is I forgot the name of it.
Yeah, Death of Stalin. No, Stalin.
Yeah, Death of Stalin.
Yeah.
That was a great film. You're wrong. You're wrong.
Okay.
Right on this, but you're wrong.
But Stalin, you have to remember, controlled the whole society. Lenin was there and had the ideological base, even if he got lost in that ideological base. And then Stalin came in and became this draconian autocrat that ran a society, ruled a society, put people in jail, killed them for any reason whatsoever, did anything he wanted to do, redirected a whole national income, how people farmed, et cetera, et cetera. Still fighting those battles
in
the Caribbean.
We have a break coming up here, and then I want to get to Winston Churchill because he seems to embody all of it. But I'm fascinated when I think of what we consider to be modern leaders and how they'll be viewed in history.
Yeah.
When you talk about the great man theory, let's talk about our former president, Barack Obama, as a good example. You know, do social movements that he get, I mean, he'll be responsible for legalizing gay marriage, right? That'll be on his legacy forever.
Right.
Do those social movements, do they move the needle and put him in that category?
From an uber historical point of view, the answer is no, because those are existential dilemmas which are being resolved. I am a fan of Barack Obama. I think he was a great and a good man.
But he wouldn't fit into these categories.
And had the gravitas of the presidency, and his demeanor as a president and as a bureaucrat was beyond, you know, it certainly doesn't even compare to our present president. But hey, I think he's going to go down as a C-plus, at best, effective president. And certainly does not fall in the category of a great man.
But even, yeah, I was going to say, maybe less president, but more about leader as we talk about great men and great leaders. But yeah, okay. And, you know, we'll come up because I know that the elephant in the room right now is President Trump. And does he fit into this category? Because all of the things that you mentioned at the top and even the stuff that you're talking about with the 20th century leaders, there are a lot of similarities to the way that this president has led in his role and leads the United States of America right now. We'll talk more about him as well as Winston Churchill coming up here. Professor Al Genie is here. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. He's our resident philosopher. We're talking about the great man theater and whether the great man theory and whether that translates into great leadership here on The Download tonight. Stay with us. Thank you, Mr. Mark Teer. Justin Kaufman here. It's The Download 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200. We are talking about the great man theory as we have changed it to the great man woman theory. Just because this is an outdated 19th century philosophers, Thomas Carlyle, the great man theory, essentially heroes make history. That's the concept we're talking about tonight. And whether or not
successful heroes.
Yeah, I was going to say, whether or not being a great man means you're a great leader, and also getting into some of the stories about some of the people that are considered to be great men that didn't translate to great leadership, and history's not going to remember them.
And the best example of what Carlyle means is Winston Churchill. That's why this whole thing started, because of the movie. Yeah. We were talking about it and so on and so forth. And Churchill is a resounding rebuttal to the Marxist historians who think that history, you know, that history is written by vast and personal economic forces. Excuse me. In point of fact, Churchill was the right man at the right time with the right ingredients, with the right capacities, with the right background, with the correct answers, who saw what was happening and was willing to act and risk acting on that. And in a very real sense, without Winston Churchill, we've done this. Churchill is the orchestrator of the saving of the world in World War II. He couldn't do it alone. Little tiny Britain, you know, almost lost all of its forces on the beaches of Dunkirk and then had to rebuild. And all those armament were thanks to my mother, who was, you know, who was working, Rosie the Riveter, right? She made M4s. That's what my mom did during the war, right?
Wow.
And the reality is the United States became the arsenal of the world and producing enough for the Russian forces, for every force out there. But Churchill was a great orchestrator. Churchill was the great maestro of what's going on. There's a wonderful story that when Hitler stupidly said, well, we're not going to bomb them anymore. Let's just take Russia. He called up FDR and says, one down. And then when Japan hit Pearl Harbor, he called up FDR and says, we've won. Now we have to play it out. And in a very real sense, Churchill came to the, you know, in the late 30s or early 30s, he was a backbencher. He had been many, many things. He had been in government.
Yeah, we saw that.
A total 62 years. He was back there and he had, you know, failed in a number of things. Gallipoli was a great, great mistake, although as he argued very clearly, the Admiralty didn't get there in time. It was a great plan. I was trying to divert the things in Europe. He had been a soldier. By the time he was 25, he'd been in three, maybe four wars. Most shot at executive ever in the history of the world. Fascinating stuff. An historian, a news reporter, but more than anything, what I think people don't totally appreciate, my friend Ron Green and I wrote a paper on this years and years ago. Churchill was manic depressive. He called it black dog. Of course, drinking all that alcohol didn't exactly help. He was A-type, an incredible A-type, incredible energy. I mean, he survived more strokes than any human being should be able to do and died at the age of 92. But during when Hitler was first coming to power, and, you know, don't forget, the powers in England were partly German, saying, well, this is just another politician. Hitler saying, no, this is a Nazi. It is the devil. This is evil. This is medieval evil against the ideology of democracy.
Well, that goes back to the right place,
and
right time.
And we need to fight this man.
Right.
This is not just another political leader. This man is going to change the course
of
the world.
Well, that's what that Gary Oldman movie was talking, Darkest Hour, was essentially that Churchill was the one that stood up and actually went against the grain, went against
Absolutely
Britain.
Against the grain, and said it's wrong. But not only was he a herald of this, he orchestrated it. That is, he planned it. He understood detail. He had incredible energy. Now, having said all that, before anybody calls up and says, oh, my God, you got to be kidding. There's all kinds of revisionist history about Churchill right now. This is not a man without fault. This is a great political big stage player. But personally, this man is not without fault. First of all, his personal finances were always in total disarray. He was borrowing money from everybody, taking money from everybody in order to keep going. His politics, he made many mistakes politically. Excuse me, I'm very sorry. You know, the black and tans he brought into Ireland, he used poisonous gas in World War I. He says, they're using it, why can't we use it? His was a lesser gas, by the way, he said. Right. Using troops to stop the strikes, so on and so forth. He was a white supremacist. He was, you know, believer in Darwin, that the white race had won.
So what, I guess...
Hated Gandhi.
All those things that you just said, in my feeble mind, would disqualify him
right.
as a great man.
Right. You might not necessarily have dinner with him,
right.
but you would want him to cut out your
gallbladder. And this goes back to
right?
That's right. But this goes back to the original, the word great. It confuses people when we put Churchill up on a pedestal right. because of what he meant to that moment in that time to change the course or correct the course of history. That makes him a hero in history.
Right. So what
doesn't mean he has to be a great guy.
No, it doesn't mean he has to be a great guy, but in point of fact, he transcended his own selfish egoism. I mean, he really was a great person. And there's a wonderful story about his grandchild running into him and says, Grandpa, somebody said to me that you're the greatest man in the whole world. And he looked at him and says, yes, stupid, now get out, you know. Because he was busy doing stuff.
Right.
The reality is, maybe we should change this to the affect leadership, the greatest affect in leadership. He got things done when England was going to fall. If England fell, it was not only symbolic fall, it meant that Germany, and there's a whole series of novels out there, including the one on Netflix right now that I'm in the tower, where Germany wins all of Europe. So you've got the United States of Germany
yeah.
and Japan takes everything, and the United States is bereft between them. That could have happened. You know, at one point.
Okay, so let's get right to it. I think about a lot of what we're talking about, and we a lot of this area seems to apply to the current president,
yep.
President Trump. And more importantly, here's a question I'll ask you, because we don't have to get specifically into whether or not he fits the bill and what you think of the president, any of that stuff. What I'm more interested in is when you look at how the country voted in 2016. And there's a lot of questions to why. Why would people vote for Trump? Why would we scratch? I mean, there are books written about this stuff, and the mainstream media has opinion after opinion scratching heads about why this is. And you recognize that he fits the bill when it comes to the great man theory, that Carlyle, that the people, me, you, other people around, we're also attracted to this theory. This theory plays out in the sense that we want that in our leadership. We want the great man theory to be associated with who leads our country.
All right. Let's be real careful here. First of all, I think most Republicans and Democrats who are not grinding some specific political agenda have suggested that no one expected Mr. Trump to win, and neither did Trump's camp expect to win, and then he won, and that he became the agent of change in America. We're tired of all these rascals. Let's try something else. That's just a given. He won. Fair and square,
yeah.
He beat
sure.
Hillary like a drum.
Sure.
Boom. All right. Put that aside. Now, is he a great man? And the answer is, he might be, but he hasn't proven it yet. That is, he has not yet handled or resolved a great
crisis. Now, people,
we're on the border. We're kissing it.
But
right
I would
now.
Also, I would, I guess, I would ask you, and this is where history becomes the issue. Look, you okay there?
If I die,
real,
tell my children I didn't like them that much. Okay,
I get real torn up here. All right, no, but even beyond that, some in this country, the people who voted for the president, would think we are in that crisis. That the country's going in the wrong
right.
direction, that
right.
that this
okay.
is that moment.
Okay.
This is that fulcrum
given that
point.
Scenario.
So if that's the scenario,
right.
they brought in the great man that they would believe would fit the bill in the great man theory. That's right. why he rose the ranks through the Republican primary, and that's why he was
yes.
voted
if,
into president.
If buying your scenario, and yeah. putting aside my own personal predictions.
Sure, mine too, sure.
If he fulfills this agenda of changing the Iranian package, changing the trade packages around the world, altering the state of our hegemony throughout the world.
Whatever he's...
demilitarizing the Korean zone. He is a great leader. Therefore, he will be. But he has to affect.
But
that.
I guess the question that I ask is: does he have to do all of the current policy things you just mentioned to be a great leader?
I think it all.
They're all tied together.
I think a great leader means you've changed the course, changed the direction, or saved the nation. Now, you asked me before about Mr. Obama. If Mr. Obama's agenda had been totally fulfilled, we would have to call him a great leader because he wanted world peace. He got the Nobel Prize for it. He ended the recession.
I mean, I'll turn my own words against me. I mean, you could make the argument that he as well came in at the Wall Street was crashing, the economy was crashing. Right. This could have been a situation where the ship crashed into the seashore.
Right.
And the president came in and in this crisis rose to great leadership.
That's right. It is. I heard him say this in a private conversation. When I won in November, I thought my biggest problems were going to be Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan, not General Motors, Ford, the banking industry, and the mortgage industry.
Right.
He never anticipated that he would spend 18 months of his first 2 years in office saving this country and the world from going into the Depression. I'm not enough of an historian. I'm not enough of a political scientist to say, therefore it follows, he's a great leader. But I want to follow up on your argument. If Trump accomplishes his grandiose goals and alters the sociological, financial, and political direction of the society, yes, we'll have to call him an effective leader.
There you go. No, I agree. I think about it and think about the words that we've been talking about in this last hour, and you rip just kind of to peel away the day to day and everything that's being reported and everything about whether or not he's just or whether he's ethical or whether he's moral. Along the lines, you push that out of the way because, as you said, Winston Churchill didn't fit that category. You could even make an argument that some of the great leaders mentioned before in the 20th century, the great Lincoln, you know, a lot may not fit that category.
Remember, Mr. Lincoln was greatly hated, and the Sun-Times, the editor of the Sun-Times thought him dim-witted, dull, and ignorant, just for openers. It wasn't called the Sun-Times at the time.
Yeah, the issue, I think, at the end of the day is separating. When you talk about great leadership, there still is this notion that we want our leader to think of someone bigger than themselves. We want them to be selfless. We want them to speak in this kind of way for the country when we can't. Right? Even George W. Bush standing up after 9/11, you want your leaders to be able to say the things that you need to say or say the words that bring a country together. That's out right now. Jury's out on whether or not, and I'm not sure that even fits whether or not history considers.
I think you're a Chicago Paul, and you're reducing this to a certain kind of parochial nature. I think the great man theory is about leaders, good or bad, but we want good. Good or bad that alter the structure of their society and perhaps the nation. Of the world, I'm sorry, of the world. Therefore, we can say that list that I gave you before, they are clearly effective leaders. Stalin, great, not in the sense of good, no. FDR, great, yeah, probably in the sense of good. Certainly Lincoln, so on and so forth. But can Trump, I just associated Churchill with Trump, and he himself does that. can Trump wind up being a great leader? Yeah, but, and I think it's connected to the foreign policy and the economics. Can he alter how America is perceived in the world and how Americans perceive themselves in the world? That would constitute great leadership.
That's interesting.
Whether that's good or bad. Now, if that means we become totally nationalistic, which I'm afraid of, it seems to me that the great leaders in the world right now are powerful leaders. Certainly, Mr. Putin is a powerful, effective leader. But what he wants is to re-czarify Russia. He wants to make Russia an empire again. He's already said three times in the last 18 months, the greatest mistake was breaking up the Soviet Union. And because at least we were this great power. He was a Democrat for a while, then a capitalist for a while, and now he's an autocrat. And will he be a czar soon? Does that make him a great leader? Well, it does historically, but let's ask the philosophical question. Do we want great leaders or do we want good leaders? And that's the dilemma in front of us.
Yeah.
Who do we want to be in charge of our lives? Who do we want to direct us? We have an election coming up right now. There are how many candidates? 9, 10 of them. Every hue of the color spectrum right now is running for it. Every sexual proclivity is out there. I think this is a wonderful opportunity to say, let's vote for the correct moral candidate. So, what a concept.
That's great. What a concept. And I feel like that all along, that's what this segment is about, whether or not that theory stands
right.
up. Whether or not the great man theory, it's
right.
time to say fourth and eight, punt it.
Right. And it stands up in regard to Churchill and what he did and his use of words, as John F. Kennedy says, Churchill marched words off to war and mobilized us in the process, right? And he saved the world by orchestrating the world. It's like Bernstein. What did Bernstein play? Do you know the instruments that Bernstein played?
Hmm.
Well, as Steve Jobs says, he doesn't have to play anything. He plays the orchestra. And that's what Churchill did. He played the orchestra.
I love it. You get such a thing for Churchill.
We're both short. We both drink a lot of bourbon. I'm not short, ladies and gentlemen.
Professor Al Genie in studio, our resident philosopher, also the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. So we got to figure out, you're coming up in June because you're taking a trip. You're getting out of here.
I'm lecturing in South Africa on leadership. You know, if you write a couple of books and you have an expensive suit and you're more than 1,000 miles away from home, they think you're an expert.
You should bring me out. We can have this conversation. We can do this in front of the...
How about if we procrastinate when next we meet?
There you go, yeah.
We're going to procrastinate.
Oh, that's good. Procrastination, okay. Great. Professor Al Genie, great to see you, bud.
Good to see you.